Welcome to Podcast Gurus, brought to you by GHM Marketing. Our guest today is David Savage, and is a group technology evangelist at Nash Squared, and editor and host of Tech Talks. Tech Talks is a podcast that unravels the minds of tech leaders and delves deep into the startup stories, financing, growth, innovation, and cultural transformations that drive the tech industry. Today, expect to learn the role of podcasting as a networking tool and its potential for facilitating connections between industry leaders. Explore the importance of a supportive company culture in fostering experimental projects, allowing for innovation. Discover strategies for staying updated on technical aspects and industry trends, especially with for professionals and diverse backgrounds, and much more. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you're there, please give us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the show, and we're going to keep bringing you all the different ways different gurus can help you learn how to use your podcast to grow your business. And with that, here is David Savage.
David, thank you so much for coming on Podcast Gurus. We are going to talk about a lot of very interesting stuff today, and it's not your first time. So maybe to begin with, can you walk me through what's the Tech Talks story, apart from the amazing name that it is?
The name that is fairly widely used now. I hadn't realized that 9 years ago when I picked it, that it would be kind of as many different variants of that name on different podcasts. So it can sometimes mean a bit of a minefield in making sure that people are listening to the right one. No, I was a recruiter. I was in technology recruitment. And had been for a number of years. So I've worked at a company called Nash Squared for the last 17 years. And 9 years ago, I had this idea that when you're talking to technology leaders, they are very keen to see insight from the industry, to hear from peers. You know, they like going to events, they like reading surveys, but they don't always have the time necessarily to do that. And they're often in delivery mode and therefore kind of focused and head down. And at the time I thought, well, a content channel might be a really good way of helping them understand what their peers were doing and what the trends were across the market without necessarily having to give up time or sitting down and creating a survey, which obviously is something that's far less frequent than a piece of content. And I would have done a YouTube channel, but didn't have the money or the know-how. And 9 years ago, podcasting wasn't vogue, but what it was and what it remains is cheap and accessible. And so I put my phone in the middle of the table and I started recording interviews with, at the time, initially contacts and clients, and then from there it's kind of branched out to where it is today. And I think officially it's 637 episodes, but it's probably more like 700.
Solid. So what do you, I guess it's in the title, right? But what do you talk about in Tech Talks? What's the point of the podcast?
Yeah, well, it sometimes needs a bit of explanation because it's not a technical conversation. It's tech in as much as tech-enabled. So it's the challenges that leaders across any range of different industries, to be perfectly honest with you, are confronted with, how they handle those. So whether you're talking about going through a transformation journey or whether you're talking about finding the right talent, or you're talking about being an inclusive organization or placing sustainability at the agenda, how leaders face those challenges. And it is through the prism, through the frame of technology enabled. So we more often than not talk to tech businesses in as much as, you know, technology is fundamental to what they do, be it an app or a service or a platform. But sometimes it might be a little bit more loose. So Hilo Athletics produce vegan running shoes. On the surface, they are not a technology business, and Michael, their founder, is not a technologist, he's an ex-footballer. But tech is fundamental to what they're doing. So it's trying to find different insight for leaders, for digital leaders from across the industry, and being a bit broad in its scope in terms of, I suppose, getting as many different influences and bits of insight that might help people.
Love that. So you talked at the Web Summit of Rio in 2023, and you said
something. And last week, 2023 as well.
Here we go. As well. So I unfortunately didn't see the recording of this year's one yet, but we'll definitely not miss it out. I think you said something quite interesting when you were explaining why you started this podcast. You said basically, I didn't want to start a podcast to begin with, and you were thinking more about starting a YouTube channel. And so what have you seen being maybe the actual upsides of a podcast that you could have in hindsight not have had with a YouTube channel, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, the first one is it's practical. If you're looking to produce content and it's an audio format, and look, I know that there are plenty of podcasts out there that do include video as well, but
right.
Thinking about it in its purest form as an audio piece of content, it's a lot less intimidating for someone who maybe isn't so comfortable or familiar with public speaking to not worry about how they're being seen whilst they're talking. And it makes it a lot easier to edit. So on two fronts, whether it's the guest and putting them at ease, or whether it's the flexibility of the piece of content itself when you're putting it together, there are two very clear benefits of going down the route of a podcast rather than a video. I mean, there's a whole host of other bits and pieces. You know, obviously video with it comes a huge amount of production time and cost if you want it to be at a high level. But I think the two ones that really kind of stand out to me have to be around the fact that you find that guests are much more malleable and comfortable and probably slightly better guests as a consequence, and the fact that it's a bit easier for you to work with afterwards.
Okay, so it's very practical. It's basically for how easy it is to start a podcast channel rather than a YouTube channel. So can you maybe develop a bit on that? Like what have been the challenges that you've seen and faced as a podcaster? So you were kind of backed and doing together with Nash Squared, which I want to talk about in a second. But like, what are the things that you did encounter in the podcasting world that were to be worked around, right? Like, what are the challenges you faced?
Yeah, I mean, what I say, it's a challenge. I mean, sound quality, audio quality, obviously, when you first start out and you don't know what you're doing and you don't have any kind of, you know, I don't come from a media background. As I said, I was a recruiter. I was in sales. I'd studied politics at university. Media was not my forte. So I suppose there was an element of challenge of working things out as you went along. And I know a lot of people sometimes put off sharing content because they want it to be at a certain standard. Maybe not perfect, but they feel that it has to look a certain way before they start. I didn't have that hang up, and I'm very glad that I didn't. I was happy to share what I was recording, but you're obviously kind of, you're acutely aware that the guests that you're inviting on are going to be listening to it, and you need their support to grow. You need them to buy into what you're doing, and the better product you can create, the more they will be enamored with it, the more that they will want to share it to their audience, the more that they're proud to have been on something that they feel is significant.
Right.
For want of a better word. And so it's not the be all and end all, but audio quality, professionalism, production quality, all of those aspects are early challenges that I worked through and I'm still working through. You know, we're still all constantly trying to find ways to improve audio quality. You know, I've been doing this for 9 years. Very recently got a new piece of kit. I'll name check them, if that's okay. A Norwegian company called Nomono gave me something that they've called a sound capsule that allows you to record in very loud, noisy environments, but create something that sounds very intimate and clean. And that opens up a huge amount of possibility, because if you're like me and you're someone who travels a lot and you're interviewing people on location, sometimes you want to record remotely because the sound quality is better, and you go to a conference and you stick a microphone on someone and it might be your one opportunity to spend a bit of time with them because they're quite a high profile person, and the recording, because it's in person in a less controlled environment, isn't as good. So you're trying to constantly find hacks to improve that and to improve the way that you produce your podcast. So I think that's a constant challenge, that you're trying to kind of up your game and to incrementally improve the whole time. I wouldn't, as I say, it's not like a barrier, something that's, it shouldn't be something that stops people. Unfortunately, it is, but it's something that you kind of constantly work with.
100%. Do you do all the interviews in person, David?
No, I do. I do a lot remotely, but I love doing them in person when I can. And I've urged towards doing more remote because of sound quality. But I'm moving more towards trying to do a few more in person now that I've got equipment that I've got full confidence in.
Yeah. Would you recommend anybody to start a podcast? I think that's something you quickly touched upon into the Web Summit edition of 2023. Maybe you delved into that a bit more in 2024, but not out yet. So would you recommend anybody and any business to start a podcast?
I mean, within reason, yes. I mean, look, a few years ago when I was managing a number of sales consultants, I used to say, content really works for me. It really works for me. You should do it. Because if it works for me, it can work for you.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the wrong approach because not everyone is necessarily aligned to that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're doing a podcast just because you're told that you should do a podcast, no, you probably shouldn't do a podcast. But if you are passionate and you think it could be something that could be fun, absolutely. I think there's a distinction. You have to want to do it, of course. But if you do, and you've got something that you feel is fun to explore, or you're passionate about, or you've got some expertise in, yes. I mean, my father's recently retired and has been in the church for many, many years and is now not struggling, but readjusting to life with a little bit more time on their hands. And has been a wine educator for many, many years. And I said, you should do a wine podcast. Like, you've got so much knowledge.
That's cool.
About wine. That people would love to hear. You could just do it, sat at home in France, just sharing this knowledge about wine. I'm sure people would be fascinated by it. It's like, you know, Dad is a natural communicator, has been their entire professional life through preaching in the church. You know, that's very much something that is in their DNA. Podcasting's a perfect vehicle for that. So I think 100%. Within reason, of course. I think if you're told that you should do one, that's not reason enough. But if you see it as a vehicle to help you kind of with a passion or an outlet of something that you're interested in, then yes.
So I would really not mind sipping some wine and having a podcast episode explaining me about that wine and like what I'm meant to be perceiving, because I'm terrible at wine tasting, but I love drinking it though. And hey, if your dad ends up doing it, David, I would love to have him in the south of France. We have amazing places to taste a very nice wine, and we can organize a podcast recording actually. That makes lots of sense. And actually, so you've been a sales consultant. How do you see, and maybe you're leveraging the podcast in that way as well, how do you see the podcast not for the sake of content, which is one motivation, but simply for the fact of connecting with people within your industry that you would probably have very hardly access to if it wasn't for the podcast?
Yeah, look, the whole reason for Tech Talks existing, and I'm not going to kind of dress this up, is that it's a way of creating opportunities that may lead to sales for the business. That's why I'm employed. That's why Tech Talks is free. That's why Nash Squared have me on the payroll.
Mm.
Now, you've got to be very clear about why you're doing it. So if you do it as a sales channel, I think it will fail. Mm. If you do it as a good piece of content that is about sharing and giving people a voice, and it just so happens that because you talk to a lot of people, there are sales opportunities that naturally occur, I think that's the right way of doing it. So I think, you know, I produce 3 episodes a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays. I also get asked to speak at a lot of conferences. I'm making documentary films now. I probably interview in excess of 200, 250 people over the course of a year. If you do that with the right intention, and you do that to genuinely create content that you think helps that community, you will, at the same time, discover sales opportunities for the business that you work with, because people understand that it's free and that if it's free, there might be, you know, something else going on in the background. So if you turn around and go, well, actually, could you have a conversation with my company because you've mentioned something in that interview I think we could help with, people are open to that. So I think it's striking that balance. I sit between marketing and sales within our organization. I am that bridge. And yes, it's a it's sometimes a balance to find, but I kind of very much view it as find good content, and then the sales will naturally occur where it's appropriate. But yes, back to your original question, it's a brilliant way of connecting with people that ordinarily probably wouldn't get in front of. And especially if you have a bit of heritage, a bit of a legacy and a back catalogue, then that becomes obviously exponentially easier over time.
Wow. So there are lots of things I want to unpack into this. First off, 3 episodes a week. Like, how do you handle all this? Like, finding the guests, taking the time to record. Like, that's intense. That's 12 episodes a month. Like, how do you... Is it the main thing? Is it the main thing you're doing for Nash Squared? Or are there other stuff as well?
Yeah, no. So all I do for Nash Squared now is events, podcasting, content. That is the focus of my job. Obviously, it didn't start that way. And the podcast frequency has increased over time. And it's increased to match the level of interest. So when you say about finding guests, the problem is that we don't publish enough episodes to keep up with the amount of demand. So one thing you discover as you begin to run a podcast is that PR companies discover you. And if you're good and you're seen as, and when I say good, what I really mean from a PR point of view is that you are reliable and frequent, then they will see you as a good outlet for their clients. And I think what I've done is I've found a niche with a few trusted PR contacts who work with early stage businesses. And I've very much said to them, look, this is a place where your clients who are maybe not as used to dealing with the media can get practice. And they might be Series A or B or even pre-seed startups. But we'll talk to them, we'll give them a platform if they're interesting and if they're engaging. So I get constant inbound traffic on that front, and it'll be from kind of, as I say, pre-seed through to Series C, D startups. So it can be, you know, companies that have raised quite a lot and are growing very quickly. And they will come through all the time. The problem that I have is actually keeping up with that demand. In terms of actually putting together the episodes, I've been doing it for so many years now that I don't make it too arduous. I don't touch the interviews much. I don't edit them much. And the show is a half an hour show, and it's got a kind of a formula that's quite easy to replicate. So it has a little bit of a co-host intro, and we have a little bit of a chat to make sure that it's topical, because some of the interviews are recorded weeks, months in advance of the recording date, of the publishing date rather. So we've got a little bit that kind of goes around it that makes it hyper topical and right, this is the date, this is what's happening. But all of that can be put together within about an hour. It takes me about, once I've got an interview and I've got them, you know, I've got like 15 at any one stage pre-recorded, ready to go, it takes me about an hour to put together the show and publish it.
Wow. So how many, I love that, how many episodes in advance becomes not enough episodes in advance? Because at a rhythm of 3 episodes a week, even if you have 15 episodes in the vault, well, in 1 month's time, it's done. You're out of interviews. So what's a correct number? How much advance do you make sure to have?
Yeah, so how many is not enough? I never really have that issue. Mm-hmm. The problem is actually how many is too many. So last week, for example, in Rio, I recorded 6 interviews, which is obviously 2 weeks worth of content. Mm-hmm. But I'm already sitting on about 6 weeks worth of content. All right. So you then say to yourself, I need to stop recording because some of these aren't going to see the light of day until June or July.
Yeah.
And you've got people who are waiting on the interviews to come out. So if anything, it's actually holding back on the enthusiasm rather than finding yourself in the opposite situation. And I'm lucky that if I ever do get to a point where I go, we haven't got much content recorded, I've got this network of PR that I've cultivated over time that pitches people all the time, that I can say, hey, look, it's XYZ coming up. Do you have anyone who's suitable? And they will fire some people through. Or you find that you've spoken to someone at a conference and you can go, hey, do you want to jump on and record? So as long as you've got a good network, mm-hmm. I don't think you'll ever find yourself in that situation, because you can very quickly turn to some people to generate content. But equally, it's more a case of making sure that you don't get too carried away and record too much.
Right. I love that you have the opposite problem. That's quite a funny situation to be in. How would you, back to the sales cycles that you mentioned earlier. So that's something we recommend also to our clients, but also podcasts in general, right? It doesn't always have to be about getting millions of downloads. And actually, if you start a podcast right now, we're recording in 2024, unlikely that you'll reach the millions of downloads per month anytime soon. But you can, the power is in the niches. Like, you can go in a niche and like nail leads, get listened to by the right people. But also you can really use that podcast as a networking channel, a lead gen channel, and eventually a sales cycle. How do you recommend doing it, David? So do you have that conversation with your guest straight after the recording is done? Or do you typically say, hey, once the episode is live, by the way, you mentioned this in the episode, would you mind like getting into a call with one of our salesperson? How do you go about that?
I mean, it really depends. It depends if they've mentioned something specific in the interview.
Mm.
If during the course of the interview, they frame a problem that I know our business potentially can help them with, mm-hmm. then I will say, look, you know who I work for, just out of interest. Do you mind having a chat with one of my colleagues?
Cool. So
sometimes, yes. Because if you're having a natural conversation and they articulate a problem, it would be very strange of you not to go, okay, that's interesting that you mentioned that. For the most part, if there's a company where I go, I think we might be able to help and we'd like to talk to them, I'll wait until we've published the podcast. Because in my head, it's a case of, I want to give them something before we say, could we have a chat with you? So I will more often than not wait until we've published the podcast and go, look. So, for instance, published one last week. Mm-hmm. And they're not an organisation that necessarily I would have earmarked as a potential kind of sales target. But on LinkedIn, they are talking about hiring. Nash Squared have a large recruitment arm. 50% of the business is recruitment. 50% is software solutions.
Okay.
So we have a big team in Vietnam and India who build software for clients. And then we've got consultants all over the world who find talented professionals. And this firm are apparently, according to LinkedIn, hiring. Now, every firm according to LinkedIn is hiring. That wouldn't normally be enough to say, look, can we help? Because you respect that organisations obviously have processes and suppliers in place.
Mm-hmm.
But then their head of talent has connected with me on LinkedIn following the podcast. At that point, as someone with a bit of a sales hat on, if you didn't go, by the way, that would be very strange. So I think it's judging when there's the right opportunity. And this is why I say about doing it with the right intention and then opportunities come around. You know, if you try and do every episode with a view of could this lead to a sale, your podcast is going to fall flat on its face. But if you do it in the right manner, you might not earmark an episode as a particular sales opportunity, but their head of talent connects with you and you know that they're hiring. It'd be very strange for you not to say to that head of talent, hey, out of interest, could we have a quick chat?
I love that. Can you tell me a bit more about the position of evangelist, David? What does it mean exactly for the people who have not been in the corporate world with an evangelist in their company? Like, what does it mean? What do you do apart from recording three episodes a week, obviously? Like, what does it consist of?
I think some of my colleagues would like to know the answer to this as well. No, evangelist is a phrase that you see as a job title in technology and more often than not in the States. So the big tech companies will typically have a technology evangelist. And in essence, it's kind of like a technology expert / communications officer. And it's someone that if there's something in the news, in the market that relates to that company's technology can talk to the press about it and its significance. So you'll find that if a piece of news comes out about a particular technology area, say it's blockchain and you know you're a business who are involved in Web3, then all of a sudden you have your technology evangelist who goes and talks to the press and positions your business.
Right.
Now, we are, as I said, a mixture of software sales and recruitment. We don't have proprietary technology of our own, but we are an organization that have produced insight in the form of surveys and events for decades. And we see ourselves as leaders where it comes to digital leaders and thought leadership. So it's about sharing insight on the market around trends, talent, technology trends, etc., and being someone who's capable of speaking on behalf of the business and creating positive sentiment. You know, if I'm invited to speak on stage somewhere as the group technology evangelist at Nash Squared, and you know, we're putting our best foot forward around giving as much detailed information about the market as we can, that's a positive thing.
Yeah. How much do you need to know about the technicalities of your business to be able to talk about it like this? I'm asking this because I'm coming from a consulting background, right? And typically the person who would go on stage would be the partners or the directors who would want to become partners. But so there are people who are day-to-day in the business as well, bringing business in, and also having that hat of, hey, getting the word out there and trying to sign clients. So you have the experience from it because you've been a sales consultant, you've been a recruiter. How do you keep yourself up to date with everything the company is doing to make sure that you are talking about it in the right way at the right time with all the technology evolving around it? I guess AI is quite a disruptor in the podcast world that you are in. So how do you find that balance?
Well, look, the business empowers me by saying, this is what we want you to focus on. They don't give me lots of different distractions. The podcast in itself is continual education because you're talking to the market all the time.
Right.
Events True. Give you that global perspective and the opportunity to talk to people across the industry and soak up information about what's going on. Mm-hmm. Last week I was on stage moderating two talks, one about how AI use cases are driving real business value, and one about how AI is helping marketing leaders create strategies for their enterprise business. So there's two examples where, you know, just interviewing those four individuals on stage is immediately kind of upskilling and bringing your information up to date. And then obviously because you're in this role which is empowered and does have some autonomy and some time, then I'm in a position where I can collaborate with a lot of different colleagues across the globe. I don't work for a massive organization. I would describe us as a medium-sized enterprise. We're several thousand staff, but we're not a huge conglomerate. But we're still six different brands in
not too bad
numerous countries with a wide array of different offerings. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to get around the business virtually, physically if you can, but virtually to make sure that you're aware of what's going on across those constituent parts. And I think that's kind of difficult to do if this is something that you do voluntarily as a secondary hat. You know, might start it out as a passion project, but you need the bandwidth to be able to spend time with your colleagues to understand what's going on with the business.
Right. Sounds a bit like the dream job, if you ask me. Well, if you like to speak. For introverts, I guess.
Yeah. A lot of my friends wonder what on earth I do for a living, so.
Speak. But hey, that's a great job to be.
So I was playing sport yesterday and someone said, so what do you actually do? And I said, well, I interview people. And they said, you just interview people? Said, yeah, pretty much. If you boil my job down to its real constituent part, I interview people.
But hey, as long as there is value to it, obviously it works. Yeah. And speaking of which, how did Nash Square see the whole podcast thing? Did they come up with the idea? Did you come up with the idea? Or how did it happen?
So I came up with the idea as I said, as a passion project. I said to my manager at the time, I think this will be a great way of introducing myself to other organizations and to find out what they're doing and offer some value. And he said, all right, go with it. As long as it doesn't get in the way of what you're doing day to day, go with it.
Cool.
See where it goes. And it just kind of took a life of its own on over time. They have always been incredibly supportive. I think they viewed it as a curiosity at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's always been quite a good little area where so I'm separate from marketing, I'm separate from sales. But marketing see it as a place where I can kind of be a little bit more experimental, for want of a better word. You know, with tech talks, we can try this. And then if it works, maybe we can filter it into the rest of the business. Kind of idea.
Can you give me an example of that? What do you mean? Like experimental stage of the sales cycle?
I've been a big proponent of video and virtual events, which I know isn't significantly kind of innovative in its own right, but within our business, the way and the style in which we do it is, I think, quite different. So we wanted to kind of create pop-up TV studio style events. So it wasn't a case of people just dialing into a virtual event and it was on Zoom. It was like, no, let's create a TV studio in the kitchen and let's make it visually arresting and interesting. And so I kind of played around with those formats, and I've worked with TV production companies and looked at what works and what doesn't work. And for a little while did a chat show from a TV studio on the South Bank and kind of honed some of those ideas and those skills. And then we started pulling that into our main marketing strategy around our digital leadership report that's been going for 25 years. But it allowed me to kind of play around and develop some of those ideas and then present them back to the business and go, I think we could do X with this based on what we've been doing. And it wasn't a jump from something quite traditional to something not so traditional. It had kind of a gestation period in the meantime where I was playing around with it before it got there.
Love that. So beyond the amazing manager that everybody would like to have, like, hey, just coming up with idea, and yes, go for it. That's pretty cool. The company itself has been pretty supportive with the whole project.
The business itself has been wonderfully supportive, yeah.
That's cool. As of when did the shift happen from, hey, that's a curiosity, to, hey, okay, we're onto something here? How much proof do you need to bring from the podcast? I don't know, sales or downloads, or what are the metrics that matter for businesses when somebody in-house just starts a podcast on their own?
So look, I don't think downloads actually matter. I don't think the size of the audience is actually that relevant.
Agreed.
For me, for our business, it was when it started opening doors to relationships that normally we would not have found ourselves having those doors open to. And people wanting to talk to us because of the podcast that put us in rooms with people where decisions were being made, that it had significant value. And I've always said with content, it doesn't matter whether it's a podcast or it's written or whatever else, the most important audience is the one that it's intended for. If you write an article that you really want one person to read and that one person reads it and has a positive action off the back of it, then it's achieved its goal. And it doesn't really matter how many people read it. If you're being quite kind of, I suppose, strategic and targeted, if it works, then it's worked.
Exactly.
And I think people get hung up on KPIs that are irrelevant. Like, it's great for the podcast that it regularly charts on Apple. You know, there are 90,000 active technology podcasts on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
So to chart in the top 200 at any time is significant and helps.
It's crazy.
Of course it does. But it doesn't actually make or break whether or not your podcast has successful relevance. It's just a nice to have. And that stuff has come relatively late. There were many, many years before that that we didn't get that kind of recognition. But if you did an interview and the person who was on that interview enjoyed it and they felt that it was worth sharing, then it was successful.
Boom. A bit of the opposite of a softball. I'm not sure of my English here. Who owns the IP of a podcast like this, David? If you come up with the idea, you start it, but it's Brendan Nash squared. So how does it work, if you can share?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very open that it's Nash Squared's podcast. You know, it should be a case that if I was to move on for whatever reason, then it should be in a position that someone else could take over. Much the same way that if you've got a long-running radio show on the BBC and the presenter moves on or tragically can't do the show for any reason, for some reason anymore, then someone else should be able to take over as the host and run it. And I suppose the true test of whether or not Tech Talks is valuable to the business would be that if I was no longer there, they carried it on and it continued to flourish. And I would truly hope that that would be the case, because if it did, then I would have built something with some lasting legacy. I think as an individual, you kind of go, if I was to move on to a different role, I think that the podcast has been beneficial for me, and it has created a profile around me as an individual and my ability to moderate and to interview people. Mm-hmm. So could I start something afresh? Probably. Would it take time to build an audience? Absolutely, of course it would. 100%. So I have benefited in that sense. Would I need to take Tech Talks with me to be a success somewhere else? No. And would I, as I've said, would I want Tech Talks to remain successful at Nash Squared? Yes, because then I feel that I would have contributed something to that business.
Oh, talking about motivational pitches, that's amazing. What's the future of the podcast, David? And the reason I'm asking this is, often what I hear is like, oh yeah, I'd love to do more episodes. You're already doing 3 a week. So I don't know if that's the future of the podcast, but I will dare asking. What do you want of the podcast in the future?
I don't really think that far ahead, I'll be honest. I think it's the same thing with my work and my professional life. I'm sorry to kind of give you a fairly fudged answer, but I never
really do
anything in life more than about a year or 18 months in advance anyway.
Right.
Because I don't think there's much sense in doing that. Like, I know I am planning for the next year, because I know what my budget for the next year is, and I know what I want to try and deliver. So I can say with absolute certainty what my plans are for the next 12 months to 18 months. Beyond that, you don't really know. You don't know if your organisation is going to have a change of leadership. You don't know if your personal circumstances are going to change in a way that you hadn't foreseen. Like, I think having some high-minded goal about where you might be going with something like this is perhaps not foolish, but slightly... I don't know what value it has. What is the future of the podcast? To keep doing it for as long as I enjoy it.
Oh, I love answer after answer. And that makes sense, because you also don't know whether new technology is going to arrive in your industry and disrupt it completely, aka AI. So what's the matter of like, not scheduling, but like forcing for beyond 12 months? I love it. Yeah. What would be your advice to podcaster, David? And here, I'm seeking two kind of advice. The ones for the people who are wannabe podcasters, so they are thinking about it. We are mostly looking at people who have a business or who are entrepreneurs and who start seeing the benefit of podcasting for a business, right? So those ones, but also the actual podcasters who are maybe struggling with XYZ. What's your best couple of advice for those two situations?
Sorry. So what were the two situations again?
So the first situation is, what's your advice for wannabe podcasters, the ones who've been thinking of starting a podcast or want to start a podcast but don't know where to start or whatever, and the ones who have a podcast but are not making the most out of it? I guess it leans into everything we've talked here, but like, to summarize it, what would be your advice to those two type of people?
For those who haven't started but are thinking about it, why not? Like... There's no reason to delay. There's like, it's just one of those things that you can procrastinate and put off for as long as you like, but that is all you're doing. It really is one of those things that if it's something that you're thinking about, there can be any number of different reasons that you can put these things off. Mm-hmm. But it's the only way that you're going to learn, the only way that you're going to improve, and the only way that you're going to enjoy it is actually just by doing. And I think that, you know, there is nothing bad going to come out of getting on with and doing it. It might not be very good to begin with. You might find that no one listens. Christ, I look at the listenership followers for Spotify for like the first 9 months of Tech Talks. And I think it took us about 6 months to get a follower. You know, it took ages to get kind of any real traction and people could kind of pay attention to it. But that's fine. All that time, we were learning and I was getting better and honing it. And so it's fine. It gives you a free hit. And no one goes back and kind of goes, oh, that thing that you did 9 years ago, that was rubbish. And if they did, you go, yeah, of course it was. We're new to it. What's your point?
What's the point?
Still here, still doing it. And I think it's a similar answer to those who have been podcasting for a while and maybe, you know, just make content that you enjoy, that you find interesting. And I think if you do that, you know, the episodes that I think don't quite work are the ones where I'm like, I don't really, that interview, that person, I didn't feel it. You know, it's really intangible, but you're just looking for stuff that you find fascinating and interesting. And if you do that, and another key that I suppose does lean into that is get your guests talking about stuff that they are passionate about. Don't ask them questions that you think are interesting. Ask them what they want to talk about. If you do that, then I think that they will buy into it, and therefore you'll end up creating something that's really shareable.
I love this piece of advice. Well, both, but like this last one, ask questions your guests want to talk about. Oh, golden nuggets. Love it. David, three podcasts that you listen to that you would recommend anybody listening to this episode right now listening as well. And the only rule is you cannot say Tech Talks, because obviously it will be at the top of the show notes.
Okay.
What do you listen to yourself, maybe?
So I was just trying to think so I listen to stuff that I very rarely listen to business or work podcasts. So
interesting.
I listen to a podcast called Ghost Story, which is an investigative journalistic piece that you will find on all different streaming platforms. That is this part true crime, part mystery, part family investigation from a British journalist about a ghost in a Victorian house and a potential murder within the family that is fascinating and brilliantly put together. It's not true crime. That would be doing it a disservice. And it's not paranormal. It's a really interesting blend, and that's well worth listening to.
Interesting.
I listen to something called Pod on the Tyne, which is a podcast all about Newcastle United, because I'm a massive football nerd and I'm from Newcastle. And so catching up, I live a very long way from Newcastle now, so catching up with the latest from Newcastle is something that I always enjoy, and I enjoy hearing accents from people who remind me of home. And then the other one that I listen to regularly is the Louis Theroux podcast. Louis Theroux is a British interviewer who is brilliant. He's one of the best interviewers, documentary makers around, and has been for 20 odd years. And I love his interview style, so I always find listening to his interviews fascinating.
I love it. How do you spell this? Louis Theroux?
Theroux is spelt, hang on a minute, Louis, Louis, and then Theroux is Theroux.
Amazing. That sounds very French.
Well, yeah, it is a French name, yeah. I think his maternal, one of his grandparents or one of his parents, perhaps. I think he might be half French. I'm not sure, but it's a French name.
Fair. YouTube channel, David? Any day? Any chance to see a YouTube channel of Tech Talks or like also from AshSquared in general? If you're advocating for video format as well and like digital events, these kind of things, is YouTube in the scope? I'm asking this because we recently had the editor of Pod News on the show, and he was explaining how Google has always miserably failed at getting into the podcast space. Well, they had Google Podcasts, but they shut it down. So what's your view on YouTube, and is it an upcoming project?
So we have a YouTube channel, just purely because I think that we should have a YouTube channel. I don't really write video to it. And I don't really put any time or attention into it. Yeah, of course. Like, if that's a channel that works for you, then great. As I said, the show that we've got is audio. What we do is we host our podcast on Spotify for Podcasters, which allows us to upload video to Spotify, which then is released as audio to all the other channels.
Yeah.
So every now and then we will do video episodes. And I suppose that's a kind of a project in itself, in as much as we will do an interview where we will go on location with someone and we will shoot with a professional production crew, but we do it very rarely, and we do them as special episodes, as kind of standalone one-off kind of episodes that I think kind of are a bit of a fun break from the format, because it's fun to keep it fresh and to mix it up.
Right.
Of course YouTube has its place. I like the audio format.
David Savage, ladies and gentlemen. David, thank you so much for coming on the show.